Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, welcome back. Hour three of our five-hour suck-a-thon. It'll take you up till noon. Sitting in for Molly and Haw and Bernstein and Rahimi. It's Saturday suckage on Monday, so it's holiday suckage. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. And on Friday, Mark Grody sat in for Mike Mulligan. He worked with David Haw, and they got around to talking about country music. David, we'll see if he's a Johnny Cash come lately, but it reminded me of this event in my life, this episode, this story I would come to write, Mark. Country music, I found out, is never about the music, it's about the words, and they don't call them lyrics, because they're words. Lyrics are what, like, Sinatra sang. Words are what country music says, because the words are the philosophy, the feelings. And back in the early 80s, I was working in Simi Valley. Simi Valley was, at one time, it was the incest capital of the United States. Congratulations to you. And it was near Thousand Oaks. And Thousand Oaks was the home of the Dallas Cowboys training camp. And I was sent over there to cover, to just see what I could see. So there's like Tom Landry and Tony Dorsett, and these are the Dallas Cowboys. What are they doing in Thousand Oaks, this sleepy little bedroom community? And I ran into a man named Doug Todd. Doug Todd was the curator of the list. The list was, guys would come in to the office, get, Doug, add this to the list. And with help from Walt Garrison, a famous cowboy, and Tom Landry and everybody, Gil Brandt, everybody around the Cowboys, the list became country music song titles and lines from the songs. Like, From the Gutter to You is Not Up. And I got a hold of the list. The list was 10 pages. It was started in 1971. This is about 1981 or so. And the list was like 10 pages. And then Urban Cowboy became all the rage.
Yeah.
And country and line dancing became all the rage. And at your local grocery store, when Mrs. Grody sent Mr. Grody, when Gene Grody sent Gary Grody to the Jewels.
Sure.
At the checkout line, there was a book called How to Talk Country. And what that was a collection of all the lines from the list that Doug Todd had collected on behalf of the Dallas Cowboys. And Dallas Cowboys were behind this list. And I went back and found I don't know why I've carried this list with me, and I've carried this story with me. It was one of the most wonderful things I'd written. Because then you get to hear, feel, live the country music lifestyle, the philosophy. Like, she ain't much to see, but she looks good through the bottom of a glass. How's that for a philosophy, Mark? Girl treats me bad, but my bad girl treats me good.
That's hilarious.
Please
it's
put her out of my misery. I mean, you have to go back. Go back to when this was, you know, Hank Williams and Merle Haggard and all of the...
You're basically saying pre everything before Shania Twain.
Yes, and Taylor Swift ain't even close to this. But this is
Taylor Swift just gave up on country. She is pure pop.
Yeah, but But you understand that the country was it was about the words, and now it's about a whole lot of other stuff. They still did the Rhinestones. They still did, you know, they played at the Ryman. And I gotta tell you, if you ever have a chance, if you're ever in Nashville, and you have a, and you were in Nashville, did you get to the Ryman? Did you see anything?
Was the Ryman open? I went to the Johnny Cash Museum and the Grand Ole Opry. Those were my two country things that I did.
You know, the best thing about the Grand Ole Opry is WSM. There were four half-hour shows. If you don't know, you've been to four. You're watching four half-hour radio shows, and they're putting it together on WSM on Saturday night. And what they would do is make you seem like a big deal. All right, everybody, look under your chair and be in the row, and somebody's going to win ten. You're going to win 10 items at the dollar store. So basically, you're going to get $10. Somebody on every row.
So is that way you just go into the dollar store and you get to pick 10 things?
Yeah. Wow. That's what you want.
What a prize.
Some lucky listener is going to win 10. Yeah. And so that was, and the, I loved the Grand Ole Opry. I thought it was a great show. Did you, who did you see, Mark?
Nobody. Nobody. It was, we just went. It was closed when we went. We
just
went.
You just went and drove through the parking lot, right?
Like, yeah, we just drove through. Just to say that we visited the Grand Ole Opry. They were not open for programming at that point. So
I did that. Yeah. I did the same thing when I went to Nashville. Did you go see the remake they have of, I think it's the Athena statue from Greece? It's no. What's it called? I gotta look it up again.
Yeah, they have a Parthenon. Sure, no. There's a Parthenon.
Parthenon. That's it. That's it. Yes. There's
a Parthenon. It's a sister city. Like, yeah, Athens and Nashville. Because you often, they're the Athens of the South. That's how you get that. They call Vanderbilt the Harvard of the South.
I went to Vanderbilt too. That's funny. I was there for the weekend, and I had some time by myself, and I took a nice long walk, and I went all the way to the Vanderbilt campus, and it's just gorgeous. It's beautiful.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It looked a lot like I imagine Hogwarts would look when I was walking around there, especially the freshman dorms. So anyways, the heart of country music and all the words. So the philosophy summed up by this is just, I love these lines on this list. Like, I'll be under the table when I get over you. It took a hell of a man to take my Anne, but it didn't take him long. I wouldn't take you to a dogfight even if I thought you could win.
Oh my God, that's so great.
And this was on the list. The Dallas Cowboys were, this is just a sidebar to whatever they were doing, and they were the team of the 70s and, you know, America's team. Thank God and Greyhound, you're gone. The philosophy expressed here are just wonderful. And there are
It's so perfect because I've been watching this show that I just kind of happed upon, and it's great. It's one of my favorite Netflix things ever because I'm such a music fan. It's called This Is Pop on Netflix, and they have like multiple like half hour, 45 minute segments on just little pieces in history and music, and one of them is called When Country Goes Pop, which is basically talking about all those old school Waylon Jennings, Willie Nelson lyrics, and then you work your way up to some of the Shania Twains, like we just talked about, and how everything kind of changed and went pop. So this really is hitting home right now with me, Steve, because there was that divide over the two. Go on.
Right. Well, no, it's the that's why I was asking if you thought David Hall was a Johnny Cash come lately, because these were lyrics that were all written before David was able to embrace this, and the philosophy expressed. That's why the words were always so great. Don't tell me you're sorry. I know how sorry you are. Would you love to say that to someone? When the phone don't ring, you'll know it's me. Like, that's a great lyric.
What about She Thinks My Tractor's Sexy?
What about the one arm guy?
That hasn't been there. I'm ashamed to be here, but not ashamed enough to leave. You don't have to be country to do that. This is a classic sounding line, the alcohol of fame. How can a whiskey 6 years old whip a man that's 32? And here's something that crosses all barriers. It's commode hugging time in the valley. There are some classics that I did not want to leave this segment without sharing. If you want to keep the beer real cold, put it next to my ex-wife's heart. I gave her a ring, and she gave me the finger. I'd rather have a bottle in front of me than a frontal lobotomy.
Ooh.
That's one of the all-time great lines. One of the more famous lines.
You can still use these today, kids.
Yeah, right. You know what? Drop kick me, Jesus, through the goalposts of life, which is actually a country lyric. And there's another one about that ends, I'm going to do this as delicately as possible so Spokus doesn't fill his pants, but I can't say the full title on the air. It ends from El Paso. And the first part sort of rhymes. It's another name for rectum that sort of rhymes with El Paso.
Mm.
That person from El Paso is a country music song. And those words. And that's why this is what reminded me. The Dallas Cowboys were putting this stuff out. By the way, we're going to win some Super Bowls. And we're going to put out a book called How to Talk Country. It was a wonderful experience. There's Tom Landry. He's go, yeah, I came in. Here's another line for the list, Doug.
And as you said, your influence for this segment that you're doing was David Haw, who was discussing his country music prowess on Friday on the Molly and Haw show. And I need to get this text confirmed, but I'm going to go ahead and read it anyway. Maybe Haw can confirm this for us. But it says that David was indeed a DJ at WKVI, the voice of the valley. Not only did he play both kinds of music, country and western, and David didn't tell me this, but he said his nickname was David Hee-Haw.
Oh, we got to get him on.
David Haw. Yes, yes. Trash.
Oh, we got to find out if that's true. Yeah. And now we have people suggesting all kinds of country music lines, or country and western. We have both kinds of music, country and western. If I had to do it all over again, I'd do it all over you. Oh, my God.
Well, take that how you'd like.
Right. And country Jewish. 630 texter, country Jewish. When she said shalom, I knew she meant goodbye. That's really good. Yeah. All right, well, we'll find out if David Hee-Haw was, if that was it. But the fact that Dallas Cowboys were involved in something like that, and they were America's team and had to talk country, and the lyrics and the philosophy, not lyrics, the words and the philosophy.
The words, right.
The words. Lyrics are what Sinatra and Barry Manilow do. Words are what country philosophers write. I thought that was wonderful. And we have not heard from Jim Tomey. He's not yet coming to hurt you. So I think that's good for you, Mark.
Well, what I've realized actually about The Sandlot, like I might retire from ripping on it because it I think it's a younger generation than me that, like, they were kids when they saw it. I saw that movie as an adult. I think if you see it through the lens of a kid, you forever love that movie, and you excuse the fact that it turned out to be too much about getting the Babe Ruth baseball back from the dog.
See, I think you just went into it with the wrong attitude. Like, yeah, it's a baseball movie, but, you know, most of the movie doesn't really have a lot to do with them playing the game of baseball. I mean, they spend probably 20 minutes of the movie actually doing that. But you gotta also admit that movie has some of the greatest clean trash talk lines of all time. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like, you play ball like a girl, and it's like the most insulting thing these kids have ever heard. Like, it's amazing.
And that I think it was Espo, we had the writer and director on for that movie on some kind of anniversary of The Sandlot, and he said what he did was he had the kids stand out there. He had a clipboard list of lines, and they just stood there, and he yelled out a line, and then whatever kid was supposed to say that, and they said that. And that's how they filmed all those lines, Trash Manta. That's what he did. He's yelling it out. And it was all from his childhood. He and his brother got together and said, okay, what were all the mean things? What were all the childish things? You throw like a girl. gambling, or whatever it was. Yeah.
My favorite personal line is when he's talking trash to the other team, and he's, you know, the catcher, and he goes, if my dog was as ugly as you, I'd shave his butt and make him walk around backwards. Like, uh-huh. I think that's amazing.
Yes. See, we're all standing up for the Sandlot, except Mark.
I'm not amused. Okay. No. But I might retire from telling people that their favorite movie is bad. Like, that's something I'm trying to work on. I think everybody should. Like, it goes into music, too, when we talk about songs that suck and music that sucks. It really might be hurting somebody's feelings when I tell you that your band sucks or that your movie sucks that means something to you. I mean, it's true. Sandlot's bad. But I think it's time maybe to retire from telling people that because it cuts right through them.
Okay. Fine. You're entitled to be wrong. I'll leave that at that.
Thank you.
Hey, Trash Panda, do we get the Ozzie Guillen audio?
Yes.
Then I want to bring that. This was really a touching, a wonderful moment. It was Ozzie got surprised with something. And I think it was just obviously the day, the 4th of July, America's Independence Day, was a perfect time to bring this up and bring this back. And that's exactly what NBC Sports Chicago did. So let's bring it back. Let's hear Ozzie, who is a regular contributor to the Mully and Haw Show during the week here, 5 to 9 a.m. David Haw masquerading as David, in the previous life,
Yeehaw.
David Hee-Haw. We have to get confirmation.
Yeah, that is too good. Too good.
In the meantime, Mully and Hee-Haw usually have Ozzie Guillen on once a week here on The Score, but he was on White Sox pregame show, and it was perfect on America's Independence Day yesterday.
Is this
Saturday Suckage? Yeah, Hee-Haw. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody. Holiday Suckage for you. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody, it's Holiday Suckage.
Yes.
Saturday Suckage, Monday Suckage. We were in for Mully and Haw, but now we're in for Bernstein and Rahimi. Did you bring all of Dan's decimal points? Did you bring all those? We're going to need a lot of decimal points to
fill in. I'm not eligible for Dan's decimal points.
Why is that?
Points. No, because I don't use them as well or as much as Dan does. So I'm not the one who has to carry the decimal points. I would think that you might. No, I don't think anybody on this show, you, me, or Trash Panda, would be eligible to carry Danny decimal point.
Yeah, well, we're sort of.
Not me. Don't put that on me.
All right. Yesterday was the 4th of July, America's Independence Day. And in the White Sox pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, Chuck Garfine is sitting at a desk with Ozzie Guillen. He's a regular contributor to the Mully and Haw Show, 5 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. And it appears they presented a piece of videotape. There was a segment Ozzie was not prepared for, as much as he seems prepared for everything and can fire right back at you, and one of the reasons to love him. Here is that moment on the 4th of July.
You became an American citizen. You were born in Venezuela, and what this country means to you, and it was, got the date right here, January of 2006. That's when you became an American citizen. How about this day? What did that mean to you that day?
It's special. People, they don't know how hard that is. How many people die, how many people open the thing, how many people want to be American. It's a very honor for me to do that.
Hey, you're really emotional right now. Why are you so emotional and tearing up out in it?
I don't know. Opportunities, man. Opportunities. Opportunity opened the door for me and being great. I've been living in this country for a long time. Give my family a great cause and open the door for them to be who they are.
You didn't know that video was coming. Maybe that caught you from my advice.
Maybe that one.
Yeah.
It was funny, but I know cry that often. I'm very tough guy, but seeing that, I know how that means to me and my family.
Yes.
I was as caught off guard as Ozzy was, and I thought it was a wonderful moment.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, I caught that as well, and it was. I'm always fascinated to see what can bring somebody to that point. You know, like the involuntary cry where you just cannot help it. It doesn't have to be worked up. It's just this simultaneous thing with Ozzy. So, and you know what? He's right. Like, I don't know what that means or what it takes or how hard it is. So I thought it was kind of, in a weird way, just educational to know that he went through that, and lots of people have gone through that, and a lot of people would like to go through that as well. So that was pretty cool. Now back to Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, well, I want to say that it provided a bit of perspective. And I know that word gets, the whole idea of perspective gets overused in these moments. But like you said, we couldn't know Ozzy's emotions because we take for granted we're American citizens. That's it. Yeah. We get mad at America. We're allowed to. We're American citizens. And we take for granted citizenship because we were granted it by birth. And he wasn't. And he worked for it. He fought for it. He wanted it. And he's embraced it. And that's what it meant to him. I would have no idea what it meant to somebody else. Somebody who wasn't born here. Somebody who wanted it. And Ozzy showed some great, it was a great window into what that means. And it was a great, and you know what, it's another moment. When we get to the end of the Sox season, and if it ends with them winning their last game, this will be a series of emotional moments. We can connect the dots of, how about Carlos Rodon's no-hitter, right? And then you go, Jake Berger getting a hit in the majors after all he went through. So you're dealing with two guys. One guy throws a no-hitter after being reduced to signing a one-year prove-it contract. And now he's an all-star, by the way, that Carlos Rodon guy. What a great story. What a moment that would choke you up. And then we played Saturday, right? Jake Berger's debut. He got two hits. And the interview he did with Jason Benetti afterwards, and Jason Benetti with the best interviewing skill ever, just asking the short, neutral question, letting your guest talk, why didn't you quit? Why are you emotional? And he just went to talk about it. And then Ozzy talking about it. I can't imagine what's left. There are so many moments. This feels like a season of great emotional moments, not just accomplishments on the field, but what they mean off the field along the way. I don't know that you were with those 2016 Cubs, 2015 Cubs. Do you remember these kind of things? Could you look back on that?
I don't know that there were the come from behind stories. You know what I mean? Like, that's what we're talking about with the White Sox, with Carlos Rodon and Jake Berger, and then your mean Mercedes, too, for that matter, for what he did at the beginning of this season. Then you add in the Tony La Russa story, which, you know, they talk about coming from behind. If he continues to go through this season unscathed, previous to the scathing that he had, things
will be entrance.
Like, and this is all if they win the World Series. Tony La Russa thing will be probably pretty emotional for Tony La Russa and the White Sox organization as well, and then he'll probably retire after this year, and then they'll tell Ozzie Guillen that he's not a candidate for the job, and that's the way it'll go down. But with the Cubs, it was more about the
the plan being put into place, and then the march to the big leagues in 2015 with Chris Bryant coming up, with Addison Russell coming up, with Kyle Schwarber coming up, and then all of it working, which in the past it had. So I guess you could go to the past and say, relative to these super prospects like Kevin Ori and Gary Scott and Bobby Hill and Corey Patterson and Felix, stop me if you'd like, Felix P.A. Like, remember that? Like, that, like, relative to that, that's what the Cubs era was about. It was about something that used to fail miserably, like big time prospects being told that five to a player after five to a player, like not just failing but like flopping and just being horrible. And then with the Cubs in 2015, hearing about and watching and having access to these players in the minors, and then it translating to the big league ball club. That was the story of the Cubs. I mean, I'm thinking right now, I don't know that there were come-from-behind stories like
there
that
was.
With the Cubs, like improbable ones.
There was. And it started the World Series winning rally.
No, you're talking about the Schwarber.
Schwarber was a fast-forward version of whatever you want to, however you want to look at the Jake Berger story or the Carlos Rodon story. It was surgically repaired something or other. But it was the second or third game of the season, and there he is back in time and working hard and back in time, and he starts the series winning rally, and then he's replaced by Albert Almora, who with the most heads up baseball running all year by the Cubs when he tags up and gets to second. And if that had not been so tense in a game seven after a 17-minute rain delay and you're trying to and you've blown a lead and Rajai Davis hit the home run that cost you the lead off the closer you traded for, that was Kyle Schwarber would have been a tear-inducing moment because there he is. He didn't just come back. He came back in the World Series, and he didn't just get a hit in any game. He got a hit in extra innings of Game 7. That was kind of a compressed version of that.
Yeah,
but you're right.
Yeah,
everything
I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not the exact parallel, but yeah, for sure, right? Because it was unexpected. And then all of a sudden you have the ability to DH. And I'd never forget that, being at Wrigley, meeting at Wrigley Field, getting ready to go to Cleveland again, and there's Kyle Schwarber out on the field warming up, and you know, these were things that would, you know, we couldn't really report on then, but it was like we saw some things coming, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. I was in a privileged position to be able to see some of the individual workouts and some of the things that were going on building up to that dramatic, and as you rightfully said, improbable moment and real contribution, you know what I mean? It wasn't just the hit to start the rally. There was he was red hot. I mean, he was hitting the ball hard, and you know, it was something to see for sure. It all came together, but there are still more of those come from behind stories. I think multiple with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah, there are, and there are those moments. Those are the people who are. Not that the Cubs didn't get great performances and worthy performances and notable performances and have, was it, I can't remember if it was 2015 or 2016 when Chris Bryant hit the full house, when he went for the full house with three homers and two doubles. He had homers over doubles.
Oh, yeah, in the Natty.
Full.
Yeah.
In was that in 2016 in Cincinnati?
Yep, it was in Cincinnati. Yeah, I think that's good. Now it's melding together. I think it was 2016. When that
and I remember,
that
remember talking to Jim DeShays about that, and I said, "Give me your best Chris Bryant story," and he pointed that out. I said, well, "Okay, that's a great moment." He goes, "No. The moment happened afterwards when he didn't come out and take the curtain call that all the traveling Cub fans wanted him to take."
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
he wanted that to treat it with respect. You don't do that he didn't think you did that in a visiting ballpark, no matter how many fans you have. They cheered, that's it. And that's what jumped out to former big leaguer Jim DeShays. And I thought, oh, that's quite a thing. That's okay. That's a moment. And they did have those along the way, but you don't cry over, you don't get teared up of a guy not coming out to take a curtain call. Right? The way you tear up of a guy throwing a no-hitter, you tear up with when you know the full Jake Berger story. Oh, my God, he got two hits.
Yeah. And I was saying, and again, from filling in on the Molly and Haw show with David Haw, I was telling Dave, I was like, I'm not going to believe it until I actually see Jake Berger, because at this point, he's just this guy who has been torn and ruptured his entire career. I'll believe it when I see it. And then he gets up here and has that kind of cheat. Like, I didn't like his first hit, like, because it was Daz Cameron lost the baseball in the lights. I was like, ah, that's kind of a cheap way to get your first hit. And then in the ninth inning, he gets that little liner to right field. Yesterday, BTW, Jake Berger had a single and a triple in the game. And it's wonderful because we were talking earlier with Scott Merkin about this. Now the Sox are going to have a baseball decision to make about Jake. The story is still going to stay great, but now it is about Jake Berger and not just the story of his coming back from all the ruptures. It is now about what can Jake Berger either contribute at the big league level or as a trade piece, or are you eventually going to have to put him back into your system? So the story with Berger has many different legs, and all the legs seem very good.
I don't think, you know, the way this thing has gone for the White Sox, the baseball decision will be made for them. It has all year. And every time you thought it was dire and bad, whether it was Eloy getting hurt and Louis Robert getting hurt, whoever got hurt.
Madrigal and Abreu has had his fair share of bumps and bruises throughout the year.
The baseball decisions have been made for the White Sox and what they had already done. The work they'd put in before in their system has played out in a dream. It has been dreamlike with Gavin Sheets and Jake Berger and whoever you're, and Andrew Vaughn, your name here, White Sox, whoever you come to believe now, whoever they bring up, well, okay, this guy is just going to, he's your mean Mercedes. I'm sorry, we need a month from you. Here it is. Now he's back in the minors. And he gave them that month. And it's going to take 35 to 40 players on the active roster by the time the season's done to win the pennant and a World Series. And you're seeing how they can do it. And it's from their scouting, their drafting, their development. It's remarkable. But whenever a baseball decision has dictated something for them to do, they've gotten something. It's produced. Somebody's come through for them.
Let's also remember, too, that is all good. The depth has been wonderful. They have been able to replace offensive players, but it is still, in this case, that is all stabilized by what has been, for the most part, outstanding starting pitching, and especially in Carlos Rodon and Lance Lynn. I mean, we talked about Lucas Giolito earlier, mm-hmm. about him all of a sudden not having a put-away pitch. But you have to believe, based on Giolito, there's another one. You know, here's a guy that, you know, as the commercial says obsessively, you know, he was the worst player in baseball, and then he became one of the best players in baseball, and now he's got to figure something out again. But it is the starting rotation that has owned this White Sox team this year, because the offense has been inconsistent and the bullpen has not been what it was supposed to be this year. But as I've been saying about the bullpen, too, there's still time to get that part right, you know, to get Cody Hoyer back to where he was. The only guy in the bullpen that seems to be a lost cause for this year relative to last year is Matt Foster. And I still think some of the Foster problems started in the Oakland series last year when he walked guys back-to-back with the bases loaded, and he has not recovered from that. But I still think that there is a chance that your Bummers and your Crochets and your Cody Hoyers, who have slightly underperformed this year, can get back to where they were. And Liam Hendricks has been outstanding since sort of a bumpy start to the year. But I think, and then Kopech. The Kopech thing is just,
fascinating because they've got to start putting him in the Cody Hoyer spots, right? They've got to just put him in the eighth inning, or at least try this and maybe put Hoyer down a notch, although it seems like Hoyer is in there just about every day still.
I think that if Tony La Russa would love to do that, but I think it's going to be situational in a lot of ways. Not that there's a bad situation for Kopech, but I just think the situation with him is what can he handle? How can he handle it? I think that's what they're dealing with. So we'll take a break. When we come back, it starts on the Bears' offensive line, defensive line. I have a question or a thought, or I want to get your thoughts on the offensive line, defensive line, some items there. Can we do that, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk Bears, right, baby. Yes.
The Bears. He's Mark Grody. I'm Steve Rosenblum. Holiday Suckage, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Welcome in, welcome back. Steve Rosenblum, Mark Grody. Holiday Suckage. It's not Saturday Suckage. It's Monday Suckage, but it's Holiday Suckage. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We were in for Mully and Haw. Now we're in for Bernstein and Rahimi, and we're not sure who brought the decimal points for us to satisfactorily sit in for Dan Bernstein. So over the weekend, Mark Grody, Brad Biggs had written about the opt-out that Stop the World, I Want to Get Off. And that's our breaking caller sounder. Trash Panda, what have you for us?
All right, so this wouldn't be a true Suckage show if we didn't have Toby. So Toby's here.
There we go.
So I don't know what somebody's going to have to do, but, I haven't left the house yet. Somebody's going to have to cover for me. Hello?
Hello?
Who is this? I think right. I called the wrong person.
You generally do.
I think I'm supposed to be somewhere. What's going on, guys?
You know what, Toby? I don't usually say this, but this better be good, man, because you're interrupting Bears conversations. So do you have some Bears stuff for us today, Toby?
I would never do that. No, I really don't.
No, right now, loud.
I got quite worked up about that running story. I sounded like Les trying to explain it to someone else.
The running weekend. Story.
The Olympic runner.
Oh, yes.
Sha'Carri Richardson.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was she found out her mom, and then she took a puff, and now she can't, and
everybody's doing less.
Puff, puff, pat. That was pretty good, Les. No, that was good. That was Toby.
No, that was
Toby.
Pretty bad.
That was better than mine. That was better
than mine.
And
that's IOC being stupid and despicable as in its generally corrupt ways. Welcome to the IOC.
Right. Right.
Because it's performance enhancing, right? Have you ever tested positive for Cheetos, Toby?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
What is your go-to, by the way, Toby, post-vape? Do you have, or have you had to quell that as an everyday guy? Because then you'd be really fat.
I don't know. Well, Bugles are always a good one. Nacho
Bugles.
I love those.
Man.
Classic.
I haven't heard of Bugles in years.
Where does Funyuns rank on your post?
Oh, they're somewhere in there too. Yeah, those are right there.
So why them? Just the taste, texture?
Ruffles, the sour cream, cheddar, and onion ones, those ones are awesome because of that combination.
What about combos, pepperoni pizza, cracker-covered combos?
I'm not a combos guy.
Okay. Goldfish, those are a weakness of mine anytime. Too. If I have any size bag of combos, no matter where or what state of mind I am in life, they all go down. They all go down. So I can't... I have to know what I'm getting into when I buy combos, that they will all be scarfed.
Yeah, and because I'm 5 years old, I like Goldfish too.
Oh, yeah. I see how you pound those. I had yesterday, without even any prompting, I went through an entire container of Trader Joe's caramelized onion dip.
Oh, yeah.
They got new chips that are both salt and pepper. And then he got the onion, and all of a sudden I look down and go, where did it go? What happened here? It's all gone.
Did you ever ask Rick Camp my question?
I don't know. I don't remember your question, so I don't remember his answer.
I was wondering if he was aware that if you put Oreos in the freezer, you can completely remove that icing cake and make unlimited stuff cookies.
I don't remember that. I don't remember you positing that question,
and
Toby.
That's a lifelong, you know, food hack.
Okay. So you could just have you're just talking about eating the inside of the Oreo by itself, like a bowl of ice cream, kind of. Okay.
It reduces the stickiness.
Right, I got you.
Point, the freezer part, yeah. So
I understand. I like anybody. Yeah, Oreo, but there's already and get the double stuff, right? So you get the double stuff,
well, yeah.
Freeze them up and curl up with a nice bowl of Oreo stuffing on July 5th.
There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Bears.
I'm surprised that there isn't a Bugles bong you could make, or a Bugles pipe. What, right?
There you go. Hey, I had an idea for Adam. I didn't even share this with him.
With Trash Adam? Pastor?
Yeah, how about Panda bands? I see all these, you know, and now they make them for guys. Rings, these bands, and he could make ones with pandas on there, and just have a cottage industry, you know.
Ooh,
diamond eyes and the pandas and.
Okay, we're trying to get him gin up some business for him and marrying people. We're trying to do the trash panda,
and then he could just sell the bands. As a package deal, you know? Panda bands.
Panda? What do you think?
It's a great idea. I got a whole website I'm going to have to make now. What was the website? TrashPandaMarriesYou.com or something like that? I got that URL.
Right. Did by the way, Trash Panda, would you marry them in a Trash Panda costume? Isn't that part of the deal?
I think that would have to be up to the couple if they want to. If they want me to, hey, you know, if the price is right, yeah.
Who wouldn't want that? We should have a mass marriage. You should be able to preside over a ceremony at, like, you know, guaranteed right field. You'd be at home plate, and all of the couples are fanned out on the infield and the outfield, and we should get this mass marriage performed by Trash Panda in a Trash Panda costume. And we just got to figure out how to get how to benefit this. So who could benefit by this? This would be terrific. I would love that. That would be a great picture, wouldn't it?
I don't know. Panda? That sounds a little Jim Jones-ish to me, man.
I don't know.
We're not going to offer Kool-Aid. We're getting people. We're having people get married. The union of their life. Men and women. Men and men. Women and women. All couples are welcome. And he only has to do two things besides dress in a Trash Panda outfit, right? There are only two requirements for
Well, I love
trash
that
pastor.
One of the requirements is for you to be able to say the words I do, basically. That's basically the requirement.
Well, it's not me, it's the
no,
people.
No. I mean each person.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
only required to say two words. You could say, you could be going on for an hour and a half, and then they could say, okay, say I do now. I do. That's legal, you know.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah. And what's weird, too, is I didn't realize that. I thought the vows were something that had to be done, too. But no, he could just skip that part entirely. I mean, they had their own written, so I didn't even have to do anything for that. But that was nice.
Yeah.
You could have people say their vowels, A, E, I, O, and U. You could have this whole group.
Sometimes
Y, that's right. That's right, Toby, sometimes Y.
That would be terrific, all over, echoing throughout Guaranteed Rate Field, and Gene Honda would do voice, you know, would do the public address as we went
Frank
through
Thomas.
Yeah,
kiss the bride.
That'd be great. Yeah, Gene Honda can announce each couple as they come up. That would
That's
be
right.
awesome.
Paul Konerko.
That would just be great. We could have this mass marriage. Brooks Boyer would love this. It would make a great picture. It would be it's as family friendly as it gets. This is how you start making families, and Trash Panda's going to marry them, and it would be legal. I just think this has all kinds of great possibilities. So,
by the way, there's a little bit of football news here, guys. The number one overall pick
Trevor Lawrence signed a four-year, $36.8 million contract that includes a $24.1 million in guaranteed money and the standard fifth-year option. So there you go.
And I think that he already has the Jaguars on probation under Urban Meyer. So I think they've already NCAA violation. Toby, thanks for the call. Yeah. We have to move along. Sure. We're going to be talking something you need to get high for. You need to wake and bake because we're going to be talking Cubs after this. So, Toby, you have a safe holiday, and thank you for joining us on Monday Suckage.
Thanks.
See you, Toby.
Yeah.
So when are we doing the Bears talk? So we got Cubs at 10. Can we do the Bears after that then?
Yes, we can. We'll get to that because then we won't let Toby hijack the session.
Well, I mean, luckily we have two more hours of show. So I think we'll be able to work it
luckily
in.
Luckily for who? Luckily for who?
Indeed. Right. Indeed.
Number 11 on the AFI list. Tell Gary Grody, what we got here is a failure to communicate.
Cool.
And number
12
on the AFI list, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Take a break when we come back. Tony Andracki of Marquee, he writes about the Cubs, much to his chagrin. We will talk to him about that next. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.